Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It is Friday, December 3rd. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's take a quick look at the docket. Well, a little update on that hearing yesterday regarding Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. Ghislaine Maxwell, a little trial update. Josh Duggar, his trial update, but things looks like they're starting to get real ugly. The prosecution rests in the Jussie Smollett case. And have the changes in the law in California led to these string of smash and grabs? And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Hey, if you haven't done so already, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button as well, and leave me a comment about what we talk about here today. Let's get to the docket. As you may recall, yesterday we brought it to you live. It was the status conference for the hearing in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. One of the issues that was at basically potentially going to be discussed, but nothing did because nothing ever gets resolved in this particular case, was the whole issue about disclosures and discovery issues that should be resolved regarding the allegations made by Mark Means, where he said that basically the staff encouraged Lori Vallow to pick up the phone and call the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, and basically try to have them get a new attorney. Well, like I said, Mark Means wasn't there, at least not on the video, and the defense frankly seemed a little unprepared that nothing had been done. It was a whole big mess. But one thing we know the clinician that was going to be at issue. Her name is Nicole Cleveland, and she was a clinician at the Idaho Department there of Public Health regarding basically the mental hospital where Lori Vallow is being held to restore her to competency. So this person's name came up in the motions, but looks like the prosecution was ready and prepared to have her testify. Then there was some discussion about whether they needed to have attorneys from the state hospital there as well. So as you know, nothing took place, but it looks like the prosecution is ready to roll. I think the prosecution has had enough of Mark Means and his crazy allegations, basically slandering everybody, saying that everybody's unethical and there's a bunch of impropriety going on by the prosecution. I think the prosecution, by their response, has basically said, okay, Mark Means, we're not going anywhere, but you are. I don't think Mark Means is going to be with us much longer. Just a hunch, but we'll see if I am in fact correct. All right, let's get to the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. Let's face it, I don't think this is going the way the prosecutors were hoping that it would. Okay, remember, Ghislaine Maxwell is charged with basically the conspiracy to basically traffic individuals for the pleasure of that guy named Jeff, okay? Now, what have they brought so far? We've had one of the complaining witnesses testify, and apparently the word of the day was, or words of the day were, I don't recall. That's not what I said to the government. And yes, there were lots of inconsistencies between all of her statements over the last some 20 years. What do inconsistent statements mean? It means basically you don't recall. It looks like you're making it up, and it looks like you could have memory issues, that you could be manipulated, and it could be for the money. Kind of the theory and the theme going on in the trial. That's the theory and the theme for the defense. So far, it's coming up. So the prosecution has called the former housekeeper of that man named Jess, Juan Alessi. Now, he's 72 years old, and he took the stand during Thursday's court hearing, the fourth day of the trial. Now, he was handed a 58-page household manual that was dated back to February 14th of 2005, and it had a list of things that the staff should abide by. If anyone's ever worked for somebody in this type of situation, this is not uncommon, okay? It's called the rules of the house. And let's see what are the things that the government has tried to anticipate that this will show some sort of conspiracy. First, they said that the manual says, try to anticipate the needs of Mr. Epstein, Ms. Maxwell, and their guests. That seems reasonable. If you're being paid to be the butler of the house, and the staff should anticipate what they're going to need. think that's called just doing your job. Do not discuss personal problems with the guests. Seems pretty obvious. I'm surprised that even needs to be in a manual, but my guess is it's there because somebody violated that rule over the years and they put it down in writing. Nobody cares about your problems when you're at work, okay? Unobtrusiveness is the key. And never disclose where that guy named Jeff or Miss Maxwell or their activities or their whereabouts may be to anyone. Ladies and gentlemen, that is, so far, I'm not offended in any way whatsoever. Let me know if you think you are. And then basically to summarize the testimony is that if you work for the staff there, you are to see nothing, say nothing. There are clubs. There are certain lounges people go to. That's the rule of the staff. Like once you go in there, you see nothing, you say nothing. Not particularly offended, and particularly in this private house. Well, then one of the prosecutors, Maureen Comey, the daughter of James Comey, asked Mr. Alessi what he thought that meant. And he replied, I was supposed to be blind, deaf, and say nothing. Well, looks like he read the manual and he got it. There were questions regarding in the master bedroom. The staff were to ensure that a gun was placed in the bedside table drawer and shutters were closed. Okay, my gosh, that sounds like the Reich household at night before I go to bed. I just don't have any staff to do that. Mr. Alessi also said that part of his job was to clean up after the massages that that guy named Jeff would receive. Now, apparently these were three times a day, and they would usually take place in the restroom of the house. And asked if they ever found anything unexpected. He said that occasionally they would find some adult toys that were in the massage area. Now, in an interview with the Palm Beach Police back in 2005, Mr. Alessi admitted that he would often wash off some of these toys after young girls visited that man named Jeff for a massage. Now, the bed would have to be made a certain way after each massage, and he said that sometimes you could tell that there would be a remnants of sexual activities. Now, Mr. Alessi said that he did, in fact, remember the two girls during his employment with Mr. guy named Jeff, who appeared to be underage. He was then shown a photo of the first accuser in the trial, the woman identified as Jane, and confirmed that that was, in fact, her. The second was a photograph of Virginia Roberts, the woman who claims that the man named Jeff loaned her out to Prince Andrew. Mr. Alessi said that Jane was introduced to him by Miss Maxwell at the Palm Beach house and that he estimated she was about 14 or 15 at the time. He explained that on Jane's visits to the house, he would pick her up and that he recalled Miss Maxwell instructed him to chauffeur her because she didn't have a license. Now, Mr. Alessi also said he recalled driving Maxwell, that guy named Jeff, and Jane to the plane and seeing them board together. Now, Mr. Alessi then said that he recalls meeting Virginia Roberts on a trip to Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago club with Miss Maxwell. Mr. Alessi and Miss Maxwell has visited the luxury spa in the area when Maxwell saw Roberts and told Mr. Alessi to stop the car. Alessi recalls Roberts being young and wearing a white uniform like a nurse. Apparently, Roberts had been working at the Mar-a-Lago locker room at the time and was hired to work for that man named Jeff roughly about the same time. Mr. Alessi estimates that she was probably 14 to 15 years old. When asked about the massages and how they went on, Mr. Alessi said at the beginning, when he started working there, that the guy named Jeff would receive a massage about once a day. At the end of his employment, he was receiving up to three massages a day, and they would all happen at the same time. Prosecutors asked Mr. Alessi about the instructions Miss Maxwell gave to the staff, and Mr. Alessi recalled that she said that Mr. Epstein doesn't like to be looked at in the eyes. You should never look at his eyes. Look at another part of the room and answer him. Mr. Alessi revealed that the Duke of York, that's right, Prince Andrew, visited the man named Jeff's mansion in Palm Beach, Florida, two or three times while he was there under the employment of that guy named Jeff. He recalls Prince Andrew was the only guest to tip. That's right, only guest to tip the staff. Now, I don't know how that works. I personally like to tip, but I guess when you have the maid and the staff, I think you probably ask the house people, should I tip them, or is that just part of the job? I don't know, but at least Prince Andrew, given all of his alleged flaws, at least he was taking care of the staff. We'll see how things are going. Like I said yesterday, courtroom observers are not exactly impressed with the performance of the prosecutors, and they seem to be throwing around a lot of individuals' names. But guess what? They have to prove that she, Miss Maxwell, knew what was going to take place. Maybe she was just as wide-eyed at the lifestyle that she was living and didn't know exactly what was going on behind closed doors. We'll have to wait and see what the jury will decide. We have several more weeks of testimony, but usually the prosecution starts off with a little bit more of a bang than we've seen thus far in the trial. Now, let's talk about, that's right, Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger. Okay, I said it. All right, let's talk about it. Well, the jurors in the Josh Duggar trial were giving, let's just say, a virtual tour of a computer today that demonstrates how it is alleged that Mr. Duggar harvested and hid the alleged stash of his video images. So an FBI agent called to the stand from the High Tech Investigation Unit told the jurors at the courthouse there in Fayetteville, Arkansas, that he used visualization software to replicate the exact desktop on Mr. Duggar's seized work PC. Now, the agent testified and showed how Duggar had allegedly created a secret domain where he could access the dark web to hunt for files marked, get this, jailbait, pedo mom, and Daisy's destruction. Now, among the videos were extremely graphic. We won't get into the specifics of the very graphic images. Now, the FBI agent said that he found the two programs called uTorrent and Tor Browser had been installed 2 days later for peer-to-peer file sharing on encrypted networks. The purpose of that is to be anonymous. So the agent gave an example. Let's say I don't want to say that I'm from Arkansas. I want to hide my identity and appear like I'm coming from somewhere else, he explained. Numerous pictures were shown on the monitors to the jury and were visible to the public gallery for a brief moment. Duggar's wife, Anna, was sitting very close to the screen, but would never pick her head up and look at the images. Now, jurors will potentially hear from at least two of Duggar's siblings, his 20-year-old brother, Jed, and abuse victim, Jill, who's now 30, according to the list of possible jurors. Okay, let's talk about this very quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes there's trials that just shouldn't go to trial. And we're obviously giving Mr. Duggar the presumption of innocence because that's what he's entitled to, unless and until the jury is satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt to each and every element of the offenses charged, okay? And let me tell you, I've done trials like this, okay? And usually when these go to trial, you have some sort of legitimate defense or the client may just be in complete denial. And understand, every defendant has an absolute right to make the prosecution prove their case, even if they're absolutely guilty. I have taken cases to trial where the client proceeds against your advice because, you know, there's things like the confession, the phone call, the video of the entire scene. And the client can say, I want to go to trial. They're entitled to that. But these type of cases, I'm telling you, you don't want a jury to see this stuff. This stuff is disgusting. I've seen lots of stuff. I can look at autopsy photos, gunshot wounds, doesn't bother me. But when I had to go view evidence at Homeland Security one time for a case like this, I was literally disgusted, nauseated by it, okay? And the people that are truly, truly this sick, okay? And there are, let me just tell you this, there are. And there are little networks of these people and they communicate via little chat rooms and they actually advise each other on how to hide this stuff, how to index it. And they advise each other. And we're not talking about the guy who is in college and meets the girl at the party who's 15, okay? That's just a guy who's violated the law. We're talking true pedophiles, all right? The definition of a pedophile is somebody that likes prepubescent children, okay? That's the evidence that they are seeing here in this Duggar case. Now, the jury has to be convinced that he was the one that downloaded it and he was behind the keyboard when he did it. That's the only really defense that he has because nobody can deny that it's there. But if he is the one that is behind the keyboard and that is downloaded, he needs serious help. and he probably should not be around children, okay? Because somebody that has some sort of desire for somebody that is prepubescent, that's just not natural, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not natural, and they are a danger, and they should not be around children, including their own. Now, some people will say, oh, you shouldn't do that. I'm telling you, there's some cases that are absolutely horrendous, and this is one of them, based upon the facts of the case. Once again, Mr. Duggar has the absolute presumption of innocence. All right. So after that last segment, if that doesn't make you concerned about everyone in the world, well, maybe you should go to crimetalksearch.com and get yourself a background subscription service and see if there's anyone out there that maybe is involved in your life that maybe has something that they'd like to tell you about. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. Jussie Smollett. Well, the prosecutors rested their case the other day, last night, actually. There's no testimony today, and the case will resume next week. But the defense did, in fact, call a witness late yesterday afternoon. They called Brandon Moore, who was Smollett's music manager at the time. The defense case was rather uneventful, given the fact that the Nigerian brothers had taken the stand yesterday and the day earlier, and they described that he had received hate mail at the TV studio in Chicago and that he had this crazy idea of having two MAGA supporters attack him. Now, during cross-examination, the attorneys for Mr. Smollett tried to insinuate that the brothers tried to get a $5,000 per week job as Smollett's security. After he was questioned and released by police, that the brothers then told Smollett that they wouldn't testify at trial if they were paid $1 million each. Both the brothers responded, no. The brothers said that they never thought Smollett would go to the police to report the fake attack as a real hate crime. They believed that Smollett told them that he wanted to use it to generate media attention and that the brothers claimed that they have never lied to the Chicago police. The attorneys for Mr. Smollett were able to bring up information about one of the brothers' previous felony convictions from 2012 for an aggravated battery. Now, as a convicted felon, he can't possess a firearm, but police found several guns when they searched the home of the alleged brothers, and both brothers agreed that the guns belonged to the other brother. Now, the defense said that the brothers lied about Smollett staging the attack to get out of trouble for possessing the firearms and heroin that was also found at the home. Now, at the end of the prosecution's case, the defense moved for a motion for judgment of acquittal, which is customary in any criminal defense case, and that motion for a judgment of acquittal was denied by the court. The court said that there was sufficient evidence for this case to go to the jury. Now, the judge advised the jury that they wouldn't hear any evidence today, but that they would have the case probably no later than Tuesday of next week. Obviously, Mr. Smollett is given the presumption of innocence, and we will see how the jury decides his fate next week. Next on the docket, do you think the law change in California has basically encouraged these smash and grabs? Well, let's talk about it. So, have the laws in California allowed for these repeat smash and grabs? Well, there's a district attorney by the name of Lisa Smitkamp and says it appears that crooks are getting smarter about the areas to target. Smitkamp says these criminals know exactly where to commit these crimes and not to be held accountable. And she says that if we don't change laws and we don't vote these district attorneys out, this is going to get worse and continue. Now, the Fresno police have increased patrols at the shopping centers during Operation Christmas Presents and have turned federal counterparts for help. Some lawmakers have tried to fix things. Assemblyman Jim Cooper, a Democrat from Elk Grove and a former Sacramento sheriff captain, wrote Proposition 20, which voters soundly rejected last year. Supporters say it would have fixed loopholes created by Proposition 47, making some theft-related crimes felonies once again, and even created a new category of organized retail theft. Now, Governor Gavin Newsom supported Prop 47, and his predecessor, Jerry Brown, sponsored Prop 57, but ultimately it was voters who had the final say. Now, more than $340,000 worth of items were snatched amid 11 brazen robberies between November 18th and 28th of this year. And now more than a dozen people have been arrested for coordinating a series of tandem smash and grab thefts across the city of Los Angeles. Now, all 14 people accused of the theft so far were immediately released from custody due to the zero bail policy implemented last year in a bid to reduce overcrowding at the Los Angeles County jails during COVID-19 pandemic. It pertains to misdemeanors and low-level felonies. Ladies and gentlemen, I've mentioned this before. The bond reduction issues that have taken place throughout the country, no bond holds, allowing people to basically be released on a PR bond, is the pendulum swinging too far. Okay, it may swing back and no one will get bonds, or they'll basically make, keep them more reasonable. But if there's no consequences to it, then the reality of it is, what are you supposed to do? Okay, some people say it's an economic issue. Nobody should be held in custody because they can't afford to make a bond. Well, in this particular situation, I don't think it's high-end criminals that are in there smashing and grabbing individuals. It's, I would say, criminals that are of a lower socioeconomic status. So why should they get a free pass because they can commit crime and then get out again? Okay. From a criminal defense perspective, it makes me look like a hero when I can get somebody out of custody on a PR bond. As a member of the community, sometimes it's rather shocking. The bottom line is you get more of what you tolerate. If you want people to have the turn wheel out of the courthouse, out of the jail, straight back committing more crime, all you have to do is make sure there's no consequences that come with it. And the people that advocate for basically no punishment, no bond, guess what? Be careful what you wish for, because it's going to swing so far back and you are going to be the one responsible for it. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we get to that, let's talk about the contestants throughout the week. Monday, Lauren Hunter Damon, she accidentally shot herself in her private parts while performing a sexual act on a web platform called Chatterbait. That's right, you can't make this stuff up. The shooting has been classified by police as reckless conduct, and it would unlikely result in criminal charges, but yes, that is reckless conduct for sure. Tuesday, Michelle Stillwell was in the backseat of her Uber ride when she reached forward and proceeded to choke the victim, the Uber driver. Now, Stillwell managed to crawl forward onto the center console and bite the victim deeply on his neck. Now, in a plea deal, Stillwell admitted to battery and disorderly conduct, and she was sentenced to 18 months of probation. Wednesday, Jesse Terry got busted for allegedly trying to enter a neighbor's apartment at 2 a.m. He allegedly explained to police that a big snake told him to open the victim's door and go inside. He also reportedly admitted to the arresting officers that maybe he had smoked a little bit of crack within the last hour. Now, Mr. Terry was booked into the local jail for unauthorized entry of an inhabited dwelling, a felony, and disturbing the peace. And yesterday, Jordan Lindsay, the man with the Tesla logo tattooed on his face, crashed his maroon 1992 GMC Safari, a long way from a Tesla, that's for sure. Mr. Lindsay was arrested for felony aggravated DUI because he was driving without a suspended license. And today, a Virginia woman is facing charges after she allegedly left her infant in a crib and went out to a bar on Thanksgiving. Victoria Hidalgo, 37, was arrested last week and charged with child neglect with great bodily harm. While investigating, police determined that Hidalgo had been pulled over earlier that night. Hidalgo was in the passenger seat with bloodshot eyes while a male drove the car. The man told police he didn't know Hidalgo but met her at the paddy wagon Irish pub and was afraid she was going to drive in a very intoxicated condition and was helping her to get home safe. Well, Hidalgo was arrested, but since bailed out of jail and awaits her next hearing. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. At least she exercised some good judgment by not driving home, or at least her driver did. But that's right, you can't leave the children at home in the crib so you can go out and party. That's just dumb. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.